My name is Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
Save big money on your kitchen projects at Menards. We carry everything you need to turn your kitchen dreams into reality. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, get 15% off everything you can fit in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money.
Hey y'all, welcome to another episode of Jesse's Fireside Chats. So, here recently there's been a lot of talk about the killing of the UnitedHealthcare CEO. And a lot of people have been focusing in on this particular assassination, but while I will kind of mention that, I'm not gonna, you know, belabor the point too much because a lot of people have already covered this specific assassination, but I do want to kind of go into some of my takes on this phenomenon of assassination in general. And so this episode's probably going to be kind of brief because I'm not a historian, so I'm not going to bore you with a bunch of dates and whatnot. And I don't trust the psychology industry very much, so I'm not going to bore you with a bunch of stuff about that either. So buckle your seatbelts. This episode is called My Thoughts on Assassinations. Let's get started. So, we know that assassinations are not new. Murder is not new in general. First murder happened when Cain killed Abel, which didn't happen too long after the earth was created, so probably a bit less than 6,000 years ago. And then we know that the first known assassination was in ancient Egypt about 4,000 years ago, during the 23rd century BC. That's what Google says. It says that the first known assassination victim is thought to be one of the pharaohs. That was around that time. So we know that this is not a new thing. We also don't exactly live in an era where assassinations are more common than usual, especially when you consider that in some parts of the world, the wave never really stops. I mean, there's unstable parts of Africa where in any given moment your country could have a coup, and you know, in a lot of those countries, when there's a coup, a lot of the opponents get assassinated. Or thrown in jail, or both. Sometimes they get thrown in jail and then they end up dead under mysterious circumstances, which are not really that mysterious at all. So we know that this is not a new thing. It may seem new, or it may seem strange here, because thankfully, thank God, we don't live in one of those kinds of countries. There are a lot of other flaws with this country, but that's not one of them. And so it's kind of understandable that there'd be a lot of shock when one of these things does happen, because they're not super common right now. And that being said, I feel like the way we discuss crime, the way that not only that we discuss it, but the way that it's sometimes, like, decided, or the way we're supposed to view it, leaves some to be desired. So, first of all, it's one of my biggest pet peeves is when somebody's ruled incompetent to stand trial. Because we know that there is a rare phenomenon where somebody can be so out of it that they genuinely have no idea what they did. But that defense has been overplayed to the point that a lot of people just shake their head when it happens. Because a lot of people who are perfectly sane, as far as the legal system is concerned, at least, but are still very unwell, will try to plead insanity to get out of serving time. Although, in my opinion, I think we should bring back the death penalty, and I think that murderers should be executed. But that's a topic that I already covered in another episode. So we're not going to belabor that point too much. But I also think that, you know, to act like some mentally ill people are competent to stand trial and some are not, that does seem a little odd to me, at least. I also think that the fact that we feel the need to mention that a murderer was mentally unwell is redundant. Some people object to us discussing that because they say it stigmatizes mental illness or whatever. I don't think that, but I just think it's redundant to say that because well people do not kill other people. Even if we're talking about murders where there is a financial motive, the people who are resorting to that, they are, for one, desperate, and desperation tends to cloud your judgment. So even if you weren't already unwell, if you find yourself in a desperate situation, you will act in ways that are unwell. You will at least temporarily be unwell because the stress and desperation of your situation will cloud your judgment and cause you, especially if you don't trust in God, will cause you to do and think things that are just, that even normal you would be like, okay, that was weird, that was ridiculous. And if you were already unwell to begin with, the desperation will just exaggerate whatever situation you were in before, as far as your mental health is concerned. So, and also, if you were going to argue that somebody was not mentally ill when they decided to murder somebody for financial motive, then the only other explanation is that they are deeply historically ignorant. Because for the most part, when somebody kills somebody else for financial gain or commits any other kind of crime for financial gain, you know, like bank robberies or whatever, they tend to get caught. They may not get caught after the first crime, or they may not get caught right away. But eventually, they tend to get caught. You don't hear about too many outlaws dying of old age. You don't hear of too many pirates retiring to an island somewhere and living to be 103. That just does not happen. Because eventually, you will get caught. Just like how we say that, you know, when you lie, it's a bad thing to start lying because eventually the truth will come out. That's what happens. The Bible says we reap what you sow. And so to mention that a murderer was mentally ill is redundant. It would be like if I told you that I saw a bird flying by and I said, I saw a bird flying by. It has wings. Well, duh. Of course the bird has wings. If it didn't have wings, it wouldn't fly. Obviously. Now, all of that's not to suggest that all mentally ill people are murderers or even criminals, okay? We know that all thumbs are fingers, but not all fingers are thumbs. And all the fingers that are not thumbs, some of them are pinkies, but not all of them. You know, all shapes, all squares have four sides, but not all shapes that have four sides are squares. And of the shapes that are not squares that have four sides, not all of them are rhombuses. You know, whatever the plural of rhombus is, because English clearly needs an editor. Anyhow, we know that. And so, while not all mentally ill people are murderers, it's also redundant to say the murderer was mentally ill, because obviously well people do not kill people. And that's another problem, is after this United Healthcare assassination, there have been some in the media who have been saying that, well, that was a natural reaction, or even when talking about, like, how some people are celebrating his murder, they'll say, oh, that celebration is a natural reaction. There's two problems with this phrasing. First, not everything natural is good. There are animals whose natural stress response once they hit a certain point is to eat their own young, or throw their young at predators. Kangaroos will throw their babies at predators. Rabbits, hamsters, crabs, some crab species anyway, they will eat their own young. That's natural in the sense that humans didn't make them do that. And their bodies are reacting to the stress in an instinctual manner. So in that sense, it is a natural reaction. That does not mean it is a good reaction. And when the media figures, like the people on The View, say that, oh, that's a natural reaction, what they're trying to imply there is that it's a good reaction. They're not saying, oh, it's just a natural reaction, but we really shouldn't be reacting that way. No, they're saying, oh, it's a natural reaction, it's fine. They may not say the word it's fine, but their tone suggests it. So that's the first problem. The second problem is that even if you're not going to look that deep into it and you're just going to say that something is a natural reaction and you're not going to implicitly say it's good, but you're not going to say it's bad either. The other thing to consider is that, you know, God tells us not to give the flesh control. So if a reaction is natural, then that means that that reaction is a reaction in the flesh. Because humans' natural state, if we don't have the Spirit or we don't consult the Spirit, humans' natural state is to sin. The flesh is, you know, the part of us that will sin. Our spirit can't sin. The Holy Spirit living in us can't sin if we have the Holy Ghost. So the part of us that will sin is the flesh. And so if you're talking about a natural reaction that somebody has, then you're probably then referring to a fleshly reaction. And that means that not every reaction you have, I mean, if you touch a hot stove and you pull your hand away, that's not sinful. In fact, that's good. You shouldn't be touching hot stoves. You'll burn yourself. But if we're talking about, you know, a reaction to, you know, an assassination, or if somebody cuts you off in traffic and you wish that that person gets in a car crash or something, you know, those may be natural reactions for some. But that does not mean that they are good. And I know I kind of just repeated my first point, but where I'm going more with this is that those may be natural reactions for some, but if that's the case, then that's a reaction in your flesh. And our culture today acts like it's a good thing to let the flesh have control. And we know that that's not the case, because we know that, for one thing, the flesh often wants to do sinful and stupid stuff, or think or say sinful and stupid stuff. We also know that serving the devil is not what the movies portray it as, where, you know, you're wearing black robes and you're eating babies. No. Serving the devil is serving the flesh. The story of Adam and Eve illustrates that. You know, their flesh, they wanted to eat the fruit in their flesh, and they did it. After the devil told him, oh, you can do that, it's fine. Be as gods, you know. So when you serve the flesh, you are serving the devil. And so if you indulge, if you let yourself react to this assassination by saying, oh, well, that's a good thing that that happened. It's understandable that you would want to kill this person. You are engaging in a fleshly and sinful reaction to such an event. And so we know that that's not good. Even wishing ill on somebody, as I mentioned earlier, even wishing ill on somebody is not a good reaction. Especially when you consider that this CEO, or any CEO for that matter, does not have direct customer relations, does not relate directly to customers, does not deal with customers directly. That's what customer service people are for. So if you wish ill on, you know, a bank CEO or a health CEO or whatever, it'd be bad enough if this person had directly wronged you. But this person has not, because this person does not even know who you are, probably, has never met you, may have been involved in, like, some of the decisions that were made that influenced what happened in your case, because may have had a hand in drafting procedures or whatever that decided how the other employees were supposed to treat your case, or like whether they were supposed to deny your coverage or close your account or whatever issue you have. But whether that's even the case is kind of arguable at this point, because a lot of large companies, they have so many departments and so many heads of all these departments that corporations are almost as bad as government when it comes to bureaucracy sometimes, if you're talking about large businesses. And especially ones that have a national or international presence. They are so large that it can even be questioned whether the CEO really has much to do with anything that you will directly encounter with the company. With drafting procedures or whatever that will dictate how the company deals with you. Because, especially when you consider just how many CEOs can go from being a CEO of some company that has nothing to do with that industry to suddenly becoming the CEO at company B. You know, CEO could be a CEO of company A, which is a fast food place, chain or whatever, and then could become CEO of company B, which is, you know, a health company, a health insurance or whatever. I'm not sure how much that specific career arc has happened, but when you consider just how many times there's been a CEO who has gone from being a CEO of a company in one industry to a CEO in a company that's in a completely different industry, like back to back, it really does beg the question just how much that CEO has to do with anything you will encounter at the company. Now, that being said, that's not intended to write off this person's, you know, value as a human being. We all have value in God's eyes, and that's really the most important part. The fact that our culture narrows down your value to what you do or what you have is kind of sad. That's one of, beyond it being misleading, that's one of the biggest problems I have with the net worth statistic that we list alongside people is, yes, it's misleading because the net worth that you have is not the same thing as the amount of money you actually have in the bank, especially when you consider that part of that net worth is things like stocks and real estate that can change value at the drop of a hat. But it also reduces, or at least seems to reduce people down to, well, they're worth this much. This is how much value they have. Is they're worth $8 billion or whatever. So I think that that's really sad. And so when people will then, you know, reduce a CEO, for instance, to, oh, he's just a CEO at XYZ company. No, he's not just a CEO at that company. And that's a very flawed way that our culture views people, because it does not often take into account the amount of kids somebody has, what that person does in his spare time for, you know, the church, if he goes to church, which too many people don't, but if he donates to charity, if he has other interests, if he has things in his personal life that he has devoted his heart and soul to, like a garden, or, you know, it doesn't take into account any of that. It just takes into account how much money he has and what his career title is. Which, yes, those things are important. We're called to have, we're all called to, be involved in some sort of honest work, but, like, the fact that our culture only views people based on that is just sad. And so that's also played a role in the way that we discuss not only this particular assassination, but also just how much somebody's worth in society in general. Like when you hear the left, as I used to hear when I was a leftist, talk about eating the rich. They used to talk about the rich like they were just these faceless, and I'm sure they still do, but I don't run in those circles anymore. They used to talk about the rich as just these faceless, evil villains that are hoarding all the money. They didn't talk about them as people, really, just as things that were standing in the way. And I think that that's just, it's just sad. And so those are just some of my thoughts. I think that, yes, there is a lot of talk we could have about how to fix the healthcare system. It is a mess. I actually talked about one of the problems. I actually talked about a lot of the problems with one of the proposed solutions, i.e. universal healthcare, in the episode Medicare for None. So I don't think that's the answer. There are many people who do, but I don't think that's the answer, and I don't know what the answer is, really. I don't know of any perfect solution to this problem, and I don't even know what would be the best solution to this problem, because every solution to the healthcare problem, to any problem, really, but especially healthcare, which is a mess, any solution is going to involve a bunch of trade-offs, as well as some benefits, maybe. And so I think that that's going to be an issue we don't see neatly wrapped up anytime soon. And I definitely don't think that making CEOs, or anybody else for that matter, fear for their lives, and killing them, I don't think that that's a solution to any problem we have in healthcare or otherwise. And I do think it's very concerning, this reaction that people are having to this assassination, because I've heard it articulated by another podcast that there's no limiting principle, and that's true. I think it was Ben Shapiro that said that, and I agree. Because, like, what's to stop, if people are going to cheer this way about the murder of a healthcare CEO, what's to stop them from acting this way if Walmart does something that they don't like, and then the Walmart guy ends up dead, or whatever it may be? And I think that that is a very concerning prospect. Now, I don't think we're heading in that direction necessarily. I think we have enough sanity in our society that we're not, that's not the biggest concern we should have about our society. But it is definitely something to think about that, you know, if you create a society where you cheer on death, where you cheer on killing people as a solution, or you maybe not cheer it on, but you definitely don't discourage that solution being pursued, you're going to end up with more of it, potentially. You know, it's a basic principle. I don't trust psychology very much, but there is a principle in psychology that I don't remember the name of it, but it's the idea that if you incentivize a behavior, you're going to get more of it, and if you disincentivize a behavior, you're going to get less of it. I think it may be positive and negative reinforcement. You know, if you have a dog that bites people, and if you're a psychopath and you give that dog a treat every time he bites people, what do you think he's going to do? He's going to bite more people. He's going to, I don't know why you would ever do that, but that's why I said you'd have to be crazy to do that. Now, if you have a dog and he bites people and you punish him, you don't give him a treat, or you spank him, or whatever your punishment is for that dog, if he bites people, well, then he's probably going to learn that he shouldn't be biting people. You know, if you have a cat climbs on the table and you spray the cat for climbing on the table, cat's not going to climb on the table as much, at least for the most part. And so if you want less of a behavior, then you don't incentivize that behavior. We're seeing this with crime, and this is actually the issue I have with the way we cover mass shootings. Is that when there's a mass shooting, excuse me, the media will then rush to cover every detail of this person's life, in most cases. Now, if it's like the girl who shot up the Christian school a couple years ago almost, then there's some things that they don't cover, like her manifesto or whatever. But, like, for example, when the guy shot up the black church in 2015, it was like we instantly knew his name, his writings, his social media, everything he was doing. I'm surprised we didn't know, like, his shoe size, his favorite color. And I'm not saying that to make light of it. I'm saying that, like, you know, once one of these things happens, in most cases, everything about this person comes out. What does that do? Well, that gets you in the history books. That makes you famous. Everybody knows your name. Everybody knows what you look like. Everybody knows the kinds of things you were posting. The writings you left behind. Every person has this desire to leave something behind before we leave this world. And some people don't understand that there is a difference between good and bad publicity. They think that that's the way they're going to leave their mark, is by, you know, committing this heinous crime and leaving this manifesto behind that explains why they did it. Or at least their thoughts on the world or whatever. And so the fact that all of this stuff is covered wall to wall after somebody commits one of these shootings, well, what does that do? Well, that incentivizes more shootings. I don't think that's by far the only thing that causes mass shooters. And at some point, I probably will do an episode on that, because that is a very complicated issue. But I definitely think we should be talking about that before we talk about the idea that guns kill people or whatever. Because as I said in a previous episode, to suggest that the gun itself is responsible and that we should take it away, well, that's like saying that, you know, the matches that somebody left on a table should be taken to court because they burned a house down. It's like, no, somebody had to start that fire. The matches didn't do it themselves. They are not alive. They don't have arms. They don't have legs. They can't do that. Somebody had to light them. And it's the same thing here. The gun is not alive. The gun does not have arms and legs and a brain. It can't make these decisions itself. It can't just decide one day that it's going to go kill people. Somebody has to pick it up and decide to use it in that way. Whether that person is the actual owner of the gun or not is not always relevant, really. Because either way, it's a person making that decision, not the gun itself, suddenly becoming sentient and deciding to exact bloody revenge on humanity. So, those are just kind of my thoughts. Some of them are about the specific case, the specific assassination, but I didn't want to just talk about that specifically, because so many others have already done that. I don't want to just beat this horse to death. But I did want to kind of cover some thoughts I had about murders and assassinations in general, as well as maybe touch a bit on this particular issue. Because I'm sure that many of the takes I have on this particular issue are not too unorthodox. But it might be helpful to have somebody that kind of takes a step back and just, instead of getting caught up in the emotional hysteria, just, like, examines things from a more logical perspective. That's what I try to do on here, and that's what I try to do in general. I was actually telling somebody the other day that, I don't think I'd ever want to practice, you know, if I did decide to go to law school and whatnot, which I probably will at some point. But even if I did that, even became, you know, a lawyer or whatever, I don't think I'd ever want to practice criminal law. And one of the reasons for that is that I don't tend to find emotional arguments very compelling for the most part. So, and a lot of criminal law involves a lot of emotional events and a lot of emotional arguments, especially if you're trying to defend a client and the evidence is not in your favor, which it often is not, then you're resorting a lot of times to the, oh, well, he was abused, and, oh, well, the poor thing. Yeah, the poor thing decided to kill somebody. You've lost my sympathy there, fella. So, I tend to find emotional arguments to be less than compelling in most circumstances, and I tend to prefer to think about things when based on principles, facts, you know, even when it comes to how I interpret the Bible, a lot of times it's, well, obviously it says this, therefore it clearly means this. The Constitution, I tend to interpret the same way for the most part. It says, the text says this, therefore, that's what it means. And that's what it was intended to mean. So, I just thought that that might be helpful for some people to have somebody that sort of takes a step back and examines not only the events, but the arguments that people are making and says, okay, this logically checks out. This is what God says. This is clearly not, not right. So, if you found that to be helpful, then thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode or considered it to be informative or, you know, food for thought or whatever. Feel free to come back next time and to pass this along to anybody you know that may be interested. You can find us on Spotify, Amazon Music, the RSS feed, iHeartRadio, and Pandora. You can also contact us on our Facebook page at Jesse's Fireside Chats and on X at JFSCPod. And feel free to send us an email at jessesfiresidechats@gmail.com. That's JESSEAS Fireside Chats @gmail.com. Again, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it. And I hope you have a blessed day.